Explain how the hunting technique worked, what the tape was about.
Don't they just, don't hunters just kill things? I mean, is that what you mean, what the hunting technique is?
Oh, no, this is even better.
Well, now, I wanted to
imagine Bambi in the woods. Imagine Bambi in the woods with a little tracker that the Game and Fish Commission used to track deer animal movements. And then imagine somebody offering you a videotape showing you how to tune in those frequencies.
Oh, Bambi meets Godzilla.
Actually, in Colorado, ranchers can claim game damage and get payment. And what we were doing was getting those names of the people who were claiming game damage and sending hunters to knock on their door.
Well, I thought the most interesting thing is that there is, as a customer, pissing off people with big guns. Who are used to shooting at small, fast-moving targets. I thought, when you brought this up at the last seminar, I thought that the fact that you still got any hair at all is a total mystery.
So that was their first try, and they got tremendous amounts of hate mail and did a lot of things wrong.
Wait, I know...
But they kept going. Now you got to hear about what's going on now.
Wait, before you do that, Bill, I know how to make that work.
Okay? No, forget it.
No. Hold on. This is brilliant. This is brilliant. You send out the letters, you get the hate calls, you get their number on the ANI, and then you have someone call the person back and say, hey, listen, we're from this group, we're organizing against these people, we want to collect money to fight these people.
Okay, now, with that, I mean, how many would have given up, you sent out this letter that you think is great, psychologically you think is super, you send out something, you have 800 number, and you find out that you're getting hate mail, threatening phone calls, everybody's calling on your phone line, cussing you out. I mean, that you did have an impact on your customers, and that's good. But what they did was keep going. Now, tell us what you're doing now. Now, tell us about the adventures of what you're doing now. Tell us about placing the classified ad.
After we recovered from that... Now, one reason...
Is they're not married to each other.
That's right. I am not Sandy's love slave. we share the same room. We're very economical in our and very advanced for the rest of the people in town. You know, they wonder
modern,
about us.
Modern.
Very modern. Very modern. I recovered. Sandy wasn't my partner at that time, so she can't take any of the blame for that one. As Bill was saying, it took us 3 months, to say the least, that we had this response, this incredibly negative response. We mailed out 1,500 and then followed it up immediately before the results came back with the next 1,000. And then the results kept coming in for months, so we tried to cool everything down. Then we attended Bill's camp. And one of the things I want to mention is that what we learned at Bill's camp was truly what has sustained us now through this next effort. And what it was you can find the product, you can find the market before you have the product. And everywhere I've been taught, I'm college educated, everything I have been taught from since I was a little child was find a better mousetrap, build a better mousetrap. And it has taken me 2 years of reading Bill's newsletter, attending a couple seminars, in order to change my thought process so that I could find what people need and be willing to give it to them. I had to change. And I don't know if anyone has the same kind of trouble I have when I'm required to change. It took me a long time and a lot of effort. So I have given up not following advice. I've done that many times. And now I'm much, much, much more willing to follow advice. In fact, I have a lot of money and an enormous amount of time invested in my product. And Sandy agrees with me completely. We were willing to come here and shit-can the whole thing if it was required in order to stop losing money. Yeah, and not being in love with the product.
How much money did you make yesterday from your product?
We only sold 9 yesterday, but we made about $800. All
right.
So anyway, I'll tell you how we got this one going. After we left Bill's, we sent him a letter down a week after the thing with our idea, and it is a business opportunity, and we were able to resonate at the last boot camp. That's all. That was a very high focus for John during his talks, was resonating. And clearly, I was the example for how you need to resonate, because I was obviously not resonating with hunters. Didn't understand what they enjoyed about hunting. And anyway, we began advertising. We immediately began producing the videotape with Bill. We told Bill about the idea. He encouraged us completely, and we made a tape. We had 11 tapes. I was telling some people this morning. I sent out 11 of my first tapes, evaluation copy. The only person that had enough, that was friend enough to tell me the truth was Bill. He told me it was terrible, that if I sent it out, I would get a lot in return, a lot come back. But he did also make other suggestions. We followed his suggestions. We immediately stopped doing what we were doing. We followed his suggestions. We came to Hot Springs. We asked Ron to help us produce the videotape, and we produced it. And we began advertising it while we were here. We had done some preliminary advertising. We put an ad in the Denver Post, and the ad was very simple. It said, make $25,000 a year, part-time selling computers for free information, part-time cleaning computers. See, this happens to me all the time with my classifieds, and it's very bad. Make $25,000 a year part-time cleaning computers. I make mistakes, sometimes gross. Anyway, we placed this ad. It got 40 responses. That's what encouraged us to run down here. We were super excited. Went back to Colorado, placed more ads, got less response. We placed more ads, got less response. We placed more ads. So now we're in about $1,200 in advertising, and now we're getting about 3 or 4 responses out of every ad. Unfortunately, through John's talks, I must have written down the words test, test, test about 15 times during that seminar. So every single advertising I was doing was a new test, and they continued to get worse and worse and worse as I was desperately trying to make them better and better and better. My very first ad worked. I could not possibly believe that the first one could be the best one, so I continued to test. And in my desperation, I called Dick Geyer, I had Sandy call. I was afraid to call. This is a wonderful partnership. Whenever I don't want to do something, I say, it's your turn. And it's really good to have a partner. Somebody asked me why Sandy is your partner. I said, well, she put up half the money and works for free. And I love her. Anyway, we did this. He listened. Of all the things we needed at that moment was someone who would listen. And he asked me a question. He said, why did you stop using the ad that worked? Oh, no. I didn't want to tell anybody that ever. It took me an hour. I had to walk around the office going, oh, my God, oh, my God. So we got ourselves back together. We went at it again. We ran that same ad, this time in 10 newspapers, and got 271 responses. Sandy kept calling her friends, telling her how many responses per hour we were getting.
I told my friends, California and said, "We sold another one." She had a tally sheet by her phone, and she would say, "Oh, that's good. You sold four. Was it a $39.95 tape or an $89.95 tape?" Because she doesn't really believe that this is going to be a project that works.
Well, anyway, and now success with more and more opportunity. We are getting closer and closer, as Bill says. We're honing in on it. Last week, we sold 13 tapes total. The week before that was 9. The week before that was 6. The week before that was 9, 8. So there's a consistent trend. We're getting better and better and better. Our last chance deal, we made them an offer they couldn't refuse and didn't put enough postage on the envelope. And so you can never hear the basics often enough. I mean, it's just as clear as a bell. You can't be in love with this stuff. You can't have your ego tied up in it, because if someone says no, or if they send it back, we've had 3 returns. And the first time we had them return, Sandy was willing to, she said, "The phone's for you."
Their problem right now, and I mentioned this before, is that they've had 800-900 responses, and they don't have a very good conversion rate. They have a pretty good letter. The first paragraph is real bad. Oh, yeah. The first paragraph is pretty bad. And what we need in here is a copywriter who's willing to rewrite at least one paragraph on an installment payment plan, because, like I said, they can't afford to be successful right now because they need this letter rewritten. Do we have a copywriter who's willing to change just one paragraph as an example? Here's Loretta Duffy. Why don't we read your first paragraph of your letter right now, give it to Loretta, and then an hour from now, let her reread it back to us, okay? Go get your letter. I'm sure you brought it with you. Oh, you don't go anywhere without your letter, do you?
No.
Bill, could I ask a question? I'd like to ask you something in all seriousness. Have you considered using a different company name and a different address and mailing a different ad for the same product to the customers that got so angry at you?
We don't want the same county. We don't want to know where we live. Yeah, we've considered it.
I mean, we really didn't understand. Yeah, we have considered it and probably will do something, because the product is timeless. It's a guide. And so we can help people that want to find land to hunt.
Well, listen, why don't you offer to sell the rights and sell that?
Yeah, would anybody to bail me out?
You can always change your name as well as getting a new business name.
When something's dead, it's dead. Bury it, put it away, take your losses, lick your wounds, check your bank account, and go on with your life. When it's dead, it's dead. Okay, now, you'll change your mind about that after you have winners. When you can afford to risk $350,000 because you're in love with your idea, you can afford to risk $350,000. None of you have the discipline to be able to run one project to its end, let alone run one loser and try to resurrect it, because all you're trying to do is salvage your vanity. It's your ego you're paying for. Screw your ego. Make the money. When you have a lot of money, you can have as big an ego as you want. It goes with the territory. I'm not going to sugarcoat it because Karen's here.
Hey,
but
Ted Nicholas,
don't get confused. Don't get confused. That product's dead. If somebody wants to buy it, he'll sell it. He'll sell it cheap. Any of you want to screw with it, you're welcome to it and out of your minds.
Ted, you know, you said you lost $350,000. To me, that is a tremendous amount of money. Now, to a man of your wealth, is $350,000 a lot of money? Does it hurt to lose $350,000?
It hurts to lose $35.
That's what I was hoping you were going to say.
It's so painful. Oh, God, I feel it. I really do feel the pain, because it's a double pain. It's the pain that what I fell in love with, other people didn't appreciate, so that I was so wrong. And then, of course, the pain of the financial loss. But, you know, I started with $5,000, as I said on the first day, borrowed from my life insurance policy. And obviously, at that point, I couldn't afford to lose $350. I mean, I could have afforded $350, but not much beyond that. So it is definitely relative when, and wealth does, a couple of things that you're saying, when you have a lot of money in the bank account and your higher power has just been real good to you and you've been able to succeed in your ventures and you are prudent in other things and you accumulate it, then you're going to take larger risks, but the pain and the loss is still there. However, I like the concept of failing forward, another way of putting it. You know, I learned so many things from that experience. I always tell people that I'm close to, I've learned a lot more from my failures than all my successes put together. See, when you fail at something, you really pause and take note. At least most people do. The human being, that's how you advance, really, by taking steps into the wilderness and then learning from when you're a little child. That's how you learn about the world. And as you get older, the same principle really applies. So I've also, you know, I started 21 companies in my life, and 19 of them have been very successful. Two of them did not, some people would call, you know, failures. To me, they were setbacks because I learned so much more from those setbacks than I did from all the when you're successful, it feels really good, but you're not quite completely sure. You know, it's like hard to believe that this is really happening. That me, this little guy from Delaware, is now the world expert all of a sudden in a lot of other people's eyes. It's just hard to believe. And other people are sending you money and you think it's a dream. You know, people are sending you, your mailbox is so full of checks. You know, my book is called The Golden Mailbox because to me, the mailbox, I love the symbol of the mailbox and filled with money. Now, in my new company, after all the checks I received, it's still a thrill to have money come in.
You notice that I have my signed autographed copy of The Golden Mailbox. I got this 2 years ago and I keep it. It's a real good book. Now, wouldn't you say you learn more from your failures than from anybody in this room's successes so far?
That's right. That's why I'm so freely willing to share them.
Well, it's very gracious of you to do that. Most people are not comfortable doing that, and I really appreciate that. There's a lot of character, okay, and a great life.
Yeah, we all need that kind of character, don't we? Okay, let's start with the headline read, at least down to the first paragraph.
This is about the ninth revision of the sales letter. When I was in Hot Springs shooting the videotape, in between takes, I would draft another copy of the sales letter, sheepishly take it in to Bill. Bill would read the first line and just hand it back to me, and I would rewrite the entire letter. The first letter that we sent out was to 400 people. We got no response. No sales at all from the first 400 people. And another act of abject desperation, we took every trick that we'd ever heard of and we put a dollar bill on a piece of paper and we told people the truth. We're desperate. We know this works. This is no BS. And if there's anything we can do for you, we'll be glad to. We got 7 orders within 4 or 5 days. So we had something. We didn't stop doing that. We have continued to do that. We are continuing to get better and better response. We did revise this letter on Bill's suggestions and also on Carl's suggestions. And we have improved it so much that now it has been begun to pull 6 or 7 orders out of 70 respondents from Seattle within 4 or 5 days. So, without no other context. So it is, we are getting better, but clearly we are not professionals. And the effort that you spend to learn a new skill, I am learning very rapidly that there are people who have the skill. And if, as Ted has shared, if I can communicate to them my enthusiasm, it may work. May improve my product, but I'm more than willing to try. But anyway, this is my most current version. Yesterday, JR read it. It says, if you're tired of the daily grind and long for freedom, I'll share this with you. I wrote 25 headlines. I picked the best 5 headlines that I liked. Fortunately, I had one in there that I didn't like as a test object. And I took it to about 20 people. It's all I could stand to hear their responses of my headlines because they didn't like them very much. And what I did is I had them all upside down, the first paragraph with the headline. I had people, I turned 2 pages over and asked them which one was better. The only 8 out of 10 people responded to the word freedom. They had to have freedom in their life. That's what people want. And so with that one change, basically, with the word freedom in the headline, freedom of time, freedom of job, I have now begun to pull a decent response. And this is what it says. If you're tired of the daily grind and long for freedom, freedom to work when you want with a business that makes you over $78,000 a year, this is it. And the amazing thing is you don't need a stack of money to get started. From Patrick McAllister, 59 North 4th Street, Carbondale, Colorado, 81623. Dear friend, my name is Patrick McAllister, and until recently, I owned a computer store in Carbondale, Colorado. Before owning my own computer store, I was the manager of the Computerland franchise in Aspen. Who cares, you say?
Yep.
Well, I have discovered a way you can make as much money as you want and have plenty of free time to enjoy it. First paragraph.
So how many people say that might need a little bit of work?
Well, number one, it may need work, but if you're pulling 10% conversions, okay, I don't know what your lead cost is, but if you're pulling 10% conversions on a two-step, you have hit the golden zone.
Right, you're getting close.
Okay, and that does not mean that the letter cannot be improved, but on national statistics, people make money at 7 and 8% conversions if the leads are cheap enough. So I would say that whatever is wrong with your letter, there are significant things right with it, and I would run that as a control. If you can consistently show that you're getting a 10% conversion on a week-by-week basis, okay, then that's your control. It may be improved thousands of times. You may never, ever be able to improve it with all of its warts because direct response and selling is quirky. And it may be that the very authenticity that offends a professional copywriter about your letter is what makes it real to the buyer and subscribes them in the belief that they too can do this.
It worked.
I just learned the secret of getting the mic from you. Just hold your hand in and go like that. I just want to give you an opening line you can use and just keep your copy. Just say, my name is... My name is Pat, and I am not a professional copywriter, but what I have to tell you is so important that I wanted to write it myself. I wouldn't trust anybody else with it. Just open with that and then say whatever the hell you want.
And I want to emphasize the point of what John started and what you said earlier about taking something when you were testing and every time you changed it, it got worse and it got worse and it got worse. If you've got something that's working, don't mess with it. Don't fix it. If it works, leave it alone and just run with it. Too many people think that if I fuss here, if I change a word, if I do something else, it's going to get better. It may not, and you've spent a lot of money. Get it up, get it running, get it in the mail, make your money fast, and then get on to the next project. I have a little short story, because I haven't told one yet, and this goes back years ago.
Loretta, why don't you come up here? I mean, most people don't know who you are. A lot of people know who you are, but a lot of people don't.
Okay. Years ago, Gary and I had a friend named Marshall, and Marshall used to talk about doing a project, and he talked about this project for years until you were sick to death of listening to Marshall talk about it. He was going to write a report on how and where to pick up women. He thought he was an expert on this subject, and he was going to put all his knowledge into a book or a report or something and do it. Well, this is not a unique idea. It's not proprietary. And eventually, Gary and I decided that we would do the project. So Gary wrote a classified ad, did a tape recording, wrote a report, and we got the thing up and running. Well, we played with it a little bit. We had problems with the recorded message. When I left the message on the machine, nobody left their name and address. So Gary took it over, and he put a raunchy, really sexist, pig-like message on there, and we couldn't keep the tapes on the machine long enough to get all these names and addresses. So to make a long story short, Marshall was really mad about this. He just was outraged, couldn't believe that we had taken his project and had actually done this. So, because Gary's a good guy, he gave the project to Marshall. Now, we would run a $200 classified ad in the LA Times. We'd get $800 back. And this is on a little report that we were selling for $10. This is not a bad return. So we turned the project over to Marshall. We gave Marshall the little classified ad that was working. We gave him the tape to put on the machine that was working. We gave him the conversion letter that was working. We gave him the report. We turnkey operation handed over to him. He couldn't leave it alone. Thought the classified ad needed a little work, and so he fixed that. Then he went into the tape-recorded message, and he thought that it was classless and whatever. We needed a little more sophistication here. And by the time Marshall was finished, he was running this thing. I don't think he was getting any orders. Nobody. Nobody was calling. Nobody was answering this ad. And he was outraged. He thought that we had lied about the response, that we had ripped him off. And to this day, he continues to talk about it. But the point is, don't mess with it if it's working. If you've got something that's out there, that you're getting a response, you're showing a profit. If you're big enough, sure, because there is a place for testing. If you've got a control piece, you've had consistently good results with it, then maybe you can take a small segment and do a small test against your control piece. But otherwise, my advice is to leave it alone.
Okay, I want to...
That's my house.
Let me get Gary and Mike real quick, okay? They've got some valuable information. John Carlton needs to know this information.
Not that it matters, because I know all you guys are. The best place to pick up women in Los Angeles or any other big city is the bars where they have the male dancers, like Chippendales, where they don't let the men in till 10 o'clock, because they do all the foreplay for you. They get the women worked up, and mostly you can score in the parking lot before you even... That was the number one thing that me and Loretta put in that report.
We're going to say one last thing, and we're going to take about a 15-minute break here. You know, when we were eating dinner last night at the restaurant, we were talking about this project and all the fun you were having with your failures, and you made a statement of basically one sentence. Remember what we talked about? You want to tell them what you said? You said, it scares me to death. You said to me, it scares me to death to think that I'll have to work 50 years a week.
No. Just the thought of having to work 50 weeks a year to have a two-week vacation scares me to death.
Is that a powerful headline? Somebody write that down. Let's sell a book of headlines. We're going to hear from Ted, and then we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to look at how to find what people want, how to find people, and how to find what they want.
I just wanted to comment that what's making this couple successful, couple in the business sense, is the fact that what they're doing rings true and honest. You know, I see people all the time. The way we have a saying in my company, when you're in doubt, be honest. Be honest with people. Be honest with your customers when they call. Tell them you forgot to put the second stamp on. What's really important in your offer, a lot of people think they can get into direct marketing, and if they hire a slick copywriter who's going to exaggerate and lie about their product, that they're going to make a fortune. Or if they learn to do it, somehow they're going to take a lot of shortcuts because they're going to be so clever that they're going to get wealthy. And the reality is you're going to go bankrupt. It doesn't work. There's something, in order for you to succeed with a product, and this is a living example here, you have to resonate with the person you're selling to. You have to make that person believe. The biggest problem you and I have always is credibility. And credibility, there's something about it that all computers is true, because that's what you've done before you showed other people how to do it. And there's something in your copy that resonates that truth. And I think if you can just come with one thought. I'm a big believer, by the way, myself. When I go to a seminar, if I get one good idea that I can make money with, it's worth 10 times what I could ever pay for it. If you have one idea when you leave here, is that in your offer, in your copy, in your product, be as honest as you can possibly be with the people, and you're going to be successful. And that, I just, as I'm sitting here, I'm just seeing a living example of that very thing. It's fantastic. Congratulations to you.
I want to congratulate them, because you know what they did? They tried and haven't quit yet.
This is the end of side one. Please turn the tape over now for side two.
We're going to take a 15-minute break. Let's be back here at 11 o'clock, okay? 11 o'clock.
Funeral director, Blanchard and Mr. Masterfall, affluent older and Mr.
Okay.
How many people here are like, oh, shit. Okay. I was just kidding. No. There's something else, too. A lot of people have been coming up to me and asking me how to subscribe to my newsletter or how to become a lifetime subscriber, or they want to talk to me about becoming a client. The deal on becoming a lifetime subscriber is you get a lot of a huge package of materials, plus you have access to me in person for the rest of our lives until one of us dies. I don't want to use the seminar as a selling platform, but I had the material shipped in. There'll be Bill Meyer's office, so we're going to put a little display up of what you get. And if any of you are interested, I'll talk to you about it here. And Karen, you're going to put, yeah, we're going to put, I have not planned this, but some of my lifetime subscribers may not like me, but we're going to ask them all to wear a little red star. If you want to ask them if they think it, if they think it's worthwhile, you can. For today, there's the attorney that was interested in becoming a client. Anybody who's interested in becoming a client of mine, I'd like to buy you lunch today. Also, I mentioned that Social Security, I think that is a really hot idea. The fact of the matter is it would cost about $30,000 to do it, and I hate to see anybody risk that much money, because although I think it's a 95% chance, you know, 95 isn't 100. But if there's two or three or four people who would be interested in hearing me explain this in detail and maybe investing, is there anybody who would like to have lunch and just hear me explain this? Is my Bond, are you here? Listen, if you will just see my son Bond and write your name and then write something like chicken, steak, veggies only, or whatever, we'll order for you and have it in the room during the lunch break today. Would you hold your hands up so Bond can see you? I beg your pardon? Yeah, maybe you could just see him at the table back there and just give him your name and what you want to eat, because I don't want to let everybody order individually, because that'll just be a nightmare. We'll just figure out something, and if what you don't eat, I'll eat. And so when we... And there, who's the attorney here that wanted to talk to me? You're going to come up, and I'd like to have David Deutsch come up for dinner, too. So that's all I wanted to say. That's today, yes. Lunch. Is that all right? Yeah. Why not lunch?
Okay. Thank you, Gary.
I meant lunch. We're going to have lunch.
That's what we eat after the next break.
Yes. That's the midday meal in Arkansas.
The midday meal at lunch.
Yeah, so just let Bond know that you want to come up so we'll know how many people to order for.
What are you going to do? We all want to show up.
I'm going to tell you I was kidding.
While we're making announcements, Dave, yesterday I asked you how many of you had computer experience. There were about five or six of you that were true computer virgins. We have a workshop this afternoon at 2 o'clock in our offices, and our office manager is going to spend a little bit of time with you just showing you the very, very, very basics, and I mean very basics, of a computer system and how we use it in our office. This is not for everybody. This is just for people who have never seen a computer, because if you already own a computer or have ever turned it on, you're going to know more than you learned this afternoon. However, you get to see the system we use. For the rest of you who are interested in visiting our offices or studios, there will be an opportunity tomorrow to do that. So we're going to pass a list around.
Yeah. I'm going to pass a yellow pad around along the rows. Keep it moving, and if you want this very, very basic course that Sissy's going to do this afternoon, put your name on it.
Okay, what we're going to do on this segment, what we're going to do is we're building up for an afternoon of defining what products are and coming up with 50 or 60 products, hopefully, that we can sell, because there's 50 or 60 people in here who need products. What we're going to do right now is show you the process of coming up with a market-driven product. And that's a product that is created specifically for a very targeted market of people. And Karen Anderson's a list broker, and she's going to show you this, but before she does, she made me some photocopies of several lists here.
So you want me to present the list, and then they can figure out what the product
right.
is? Or can I present the product and then go to the list? It'd be easier that way.
No,
Nope, don't show any products. We're gonna find about 10 lists of people to sell to, and then later on this afternoon, we're going to define the products.
So what am I doing with this?
Cover that book.
I am? I'm not. Oh, all right.
Okay, this is the SRDS book. You've heard it mentioned several times. How many of you have ever seen the inside of this book? Okay, for those of you who haven't, we're going to put some transparencies up so you can see exactly what a page looks like. Now, when you're looking for products, one of the very best places to look for a market to sell to is this book. Because there are a lot of markets out there that don't exist. How many of you still have your direct marketing magazine that was in your box that you have it with you right now? This is it right here. Everybody get a chance to look at it?
Does everybody look at the magazine at all?
Inside on page 5, there's a picture of a bread maker. Anybody familiar with a bread maker from DAC? You know, it's a little device, you put the wheat and the eggs and it makes bread for you. Their list is for sale of people who bought those bread makers. You know how many people bought bread makers? 375,276 people. Now, we know what they bought, the bread makers. We know they got Visa MasterCards. We know they bought from a direct mail offer. Now, if people have a bread maker at home, do you think we might be able to come up with a product to sell these people? Now, their list is $80 per 1,000. So it'll cost you $80 to buy the names. For 1,000, it's going to cost you $290 for the postage. Now, like we said yesterday, you can test out any idea you can come up with to this group for less than $600. And this is how we find products. I mean, we could sit here in this room and brainstorm for 5 minutes and come up with all kinds of good products to sell this list. I'm sure the first thing that comes to your mind is a recipe book of some sort. But what we could do is that we could ask the list broker if he also had a list of people who bought, say, a juicer. How many people here have juicers? When you make juice in the morning, what do you do with the pulp? Yeah, most people throw it away. Now, if you had a list of people who had juicers and bread makers, you think we could write a book showing them how to make bread with the pulp from the juicers? And would that sell? And that's how easy it is to come up with a product idea for a possible offer. Now, to write the cookbook would be fairly easy because you're just replacing a little bulk in the bread recipe. Now, using that as a concept, that's what we're going to talk about the next hour, how to find lists like that. Because all I've got to do, everyone in this room, if I gave you this list and said, look, give me 10 ideas of products to sell this list, the odds are that with your focused concentration on the type of people who bought this product and any of you who are familiar with it, who are experienced in the bread maker, could probably come up with a good product. I mean, it could be as simple as a ladle to fit in there or a second bucket to fit in there or a videotape on how to really use it or how to make donuts in your bread maker or any number of other things. But by focusing on the people on the list, we know what to offer them, right? And, of course, it also gives you a good excuse to buy a bread maker. Because if you want to sell something to these folks, you ought to have the bread maker so you can experience the trials and tribulations of having your own home bread maker. Now, just as a side note, how many people own the bread maker? No, how many people in this room own the bread maker? How many people in this room have made bread and had it spill over the top of the bread maker?
That's good.
All right, now what Karen Anderson is going to do...
I'm sorry. See, I thought that they had more to it.
We're going to start looking at what the pages... And what this is a single-page ad, and they're looking for somebody to buy their list, right? What this is a 1,000-page book, 1,000-plus-page book, of other people who have lists that are that concentrated, that targeted, or more, who want you to buy their list so you can sell products to their customers. And they're going to tell you who their customers are, what their customers paid for the product, how they paid for the product, how recently they paid for the product, and what the product was. That gives you a whole lot of information, basically everything on the list that we had yesterday morning when we were talking about how to find a market. So, Karen, show them the list of people not to mail to.
What?
Show them the list of people not to mail to.
No, that's going to mess it up.
That's going to mess it up. She's going to show you a list sometime at her discretion of people not to mail to. All right, here's Karen Anderson, and Karen is the one who's been giggling in the back every time John Eager says something. And Karen's going to talk for an hour, and I'm going to interrupt for 20 minutes.
Uh-huh. Okay. Well, what I'd like to do is I just picked a... an area. We've been talking about people that are 40 plus in that age range to look at a potential market. So what I'd like to do is to start large and funnel down. So to have this huge target
that we're going to look at and see if we can get it down so that we've got a targeted market and then find a product that would be viable to mail to that market, correct?
Right, and I'm going to stand over your shoulder, and every time somebody has a product idea, I'm going to write it down.
Oh, okay. I think, okay. Oops. How's that? Too high? I don't know how to do this. Okay, how's that? Can you see it? I focus it. We could sell glasses.
Yeah, we need somebody in the back who doesn't wear glasses.
I am not a techno whiz. How's that?
I think it's the convergence problem again.
Yeah.
No, that's better.
Okay.
Okay.
Yeah, you only need to see this affluent older investors list. And what we'd like to do is just start looking at lists for
Aaron,
old...
Aaron, come up here and do your Vanna White thing.
I'm not that tall. what we'd like to do is just start looking at lists of older investors because we've defined it as people 40 plus that we want to buy to because they have Visa, MasterCard, American Express. These are people that we're looking for people that are over 40 and have money. So here's a possible list. It's called the Affluent Older Investors. They're the people that have this list, they're a member of the DMA, which is Direct Marketing Association, and there's more information about this. But here's the description. Let's look at this. It's investors over 50. The two key words in this one are what? Investors and over 50. So hopefully they've got, they might have some money, discretionary income that they could use for some kind of product. It's zip coded in numerical sequence, 100%, and then you get numeric by state and SCF. Does anybody remember what that stands for? No? This is where if you want to target a geographic region by zip code, it's the first three digits of the zip code. So if you don't want to, if you want to mail to the whole Dallas area, we'll take the first at 76.
Right.
Or
if you know
760.
If you know that the affluent area of Dallas is at Highland Park, is that
Highland Park?
And you want to just mail to the Highland Park area of Dallas, you can mail just to the affluent people over 50 who meet on this list who live in the Highland Park area of Dallas.
Right. Or you can assume affluent older investors in the Dallas area. You can mail to all of right around Dallas. List is computerized, the selects are available, and see if you think this is important. Age, so you can find out exactly how old they are. What's this one? Phone numbers, 80% of phone numbers. Why would that be important? For telemarketing follow-up, absolutely. The big trend right now is telemarketing follow-up, and it's that people will get a direct mail piece, and then it will be followed up with a phone call by either the person that has the product or someone competent to represent the product. Doesn't always happen, but it's important to look for. Okay, let's look at where this list came from. Legal journals, so how does that define some of your population? Lawyers. Dailies, weeklies, and religious newspaper, what does that say about your population? Okay?
They read and they're probably conservative.
Right. Mail and personal and private sources. We don't have a clue as to what that means from what this says. Quantity and rental rates. Now, this was a 91. This was a 91 SRDS that we got this out of. So this was received as of May 4th, 1990. So if you found this SRDS, it's going to be really important to look at this date here because you want to know how old those names are. Remember, you're looking at investors over 50. Sorry. So if this list is 2 years old, this list is not going to be 100% effective. I mean, that's just a given if it's 2 years old. The total number on this list is what? 3 million names? 3 million names on this list of affluent older investors. Okay? Price per thousand is going to be $75. You're going to get an increased charge here for the phone numbers. You're going to pay for phone numbers. Let me say parenthetically, there are lists that absolutely will not rent you phone numbers. Phillips Publishing is one of them. They will not rent phone numbers. You do not get phone numbers. So you have to figure out a way to get the phone numbers of the people on that list that you have, and there are certainly ways to do that. Okay, then you can break, they said break it down by age. You've got over 60 with phone numbers, over 65 with phone numbers, and again, here are your selects. And this is how you can figure out your price for your list. Again, you can do the first three-digit DIP. You can select by state. If you're going to select by state, say I want to do the Dallas, Texas area, it's going to cost me $7 a thousand extra to do that. You can key code it if you want for $5 extra. Shipping and handling is $2 a thousand extra. So you can see that you can look at this price for a thousand, but you may have a couple other things that you need to add on to it. So do you think that this is a pretty good list? You don't think it's a good list? Hang on a second. Why don't you think it's a good list? So you'd want to get the most recent copy of this list. I've got the April SRDS upstairs, and we could compare it.
There's three other things we want to know about these people. We want to know.
That's right.
That's right. We want to know what they bought, when they bought it, how much they paid for it.
That's right.
But you know, there's something we can generalize from this list. How many people in this room over 40? How many people who are
Notice
over 40?
Notice I did not raise my hand.
How many people over 40, and that includes me and not my lovely wife, how many people over 40 find out that sometimes it's more difficult to get up out of bed in the morning when you're over 40 than when you're, say, under 30? And see, a health
Carrie
problem...
Carrie raises his hand.
Health problems is something that happens with maturity. And we hope that we get a lot of health problems when we reach 100 or 105, 110. So when you look at a group like this, you know that they're probably interested in something that people over 40 are interested in is health, or rather than health problems, maybe how to maintain their health, because that is the end thing. We're probably going to be, our generation, the people in this room, will probably live longer than any other generation of humans on this planet, especially the people in this room, because most people in this room have a better lifestyle and will have a reason to want to live longer because you're making money.
Oh, this is available. I can get this through SRDS. Yeah. You can get selects on it. You can select by state, and you can select by first three digits of the zip. So you can get cities within states, whatever. Okay, let's look at this list a little bit. Do I have to get back up here? Ted, we'll let you comment on this one, too. This is the Blanchard Investor Master File. And the list manager names and addresses is the name of the company that's managing the list. And when you've got these kinds of numbers, like if you've got 2,000 people on your database, you'll probably have it in your PC in your office. But when you start getting into these kinds of numbers, you're going to find that they're list managers. And there are companies, Agora does list management, Carnegie in Arizona does list management. I don't know who does your list management. Yeah, then it goes to outside list managers. One of the things you'll find in the things that I handed out yesterday, and there's some extra ones on the back table if you didn't get it, is there are ways that you request a list, and there are things that you need to ask for. Okay, this description are subscribers and expires to financial newsletters. Anybody have any guess on what an average price of a newsletter would be? 150, something within that range. Let's say $100 on the average. So we know that they've got $100 of discretionary income that they're using to purchase something already. So that qualifies them. This is the gold newsletter and a personal wealth bulletin. The median age is 61, and it's 95% men. So we know if they're subscribing to they've got $100 to subscribe to a gold newsletter. Are they interested in gold? Do you think they may have purchased gold? And what's gold going for an ounce now? Anybody know? Anybody give a round figure? Thank you, Bill. Now, the next thing is real important. What's the list source? Direct mail. This is a responsive list. These people are direct mail responsive. This is not a compiled list. The people have not come out of the phone book. These are people that have responded to a direct mail offer already. And that's really important to look at. They've already responded to somebody's compelling ad to buy either the gold newsletter or the personal wealth builder. They've gotten it from someplace. Okay? Again, this is March 18th, 1991. Subscribers, they've got 82,000. Now, remember we were talking about product buyers and what people have bought? This gives us more information on these particular buyers. The asterisks here will talk about non-competitive and competitive prices. If you're selling something that's competitive to what the Gold Newsletter and the Personal Wealth Builder are selling, you're going to have to pay more for the names. That's the way it works. So these are, you've got tape buyers here. These are people that have, and usually when it says tape buyers, it means audio tapes. These are people that have bought tapes. Now, Ted can tell you what tapes it is that they've probably bought, because whose list is it, Ted? Jim Blanchard's.
Mm-hmm. Blanchard, Jim Blanchard does, what he's best known for and where he gets a lot of those subscriptions is through the investment conference that he has in New Orleans every year. And a lot of the people that attend buy the tapes.
Buy the tapes of the seminars they've
afterwards.
The sessions they've attended afterwards.
Or the people that don't go buy the tapes instead of going.
Right. So you've got people that are, again, direct mail responsive. They bought it through the mail. Or they've spent the money to go to, New Orleans is where it usually is, to go to New Orleans to attend the conference and then to buy the tapes. So how's the profile on this person starting to look as far as discretionary income? They got money. These are people that are probably not scraping together to buy food from Social Security check to Social Security check. These are people that have some discretionary income.
They got money, and they've got a demonstrated pattern of buying informational products through the mail.
That's right. I'm starting to like this list. Thank you.